Nathaniel Rateliff is one of Denver's most well-known musical exports. And to kick off our new Sense of Place Colorado series, he invites you to the Skylark Lounge, the venue he co-owns in the city. He talks about his latest album, South of Here.
I hadn't really intended to make a record. I think it was a bit of a miscommunication between me and my manager. He was like, "You're done? You don't have to do anything next year."
He also talks about writing the song that made him a star.
Son of a bitch!
And he tells the story of how that song helped him connect with a fan who also struggled with addiction.
She's like, "I want you to have this." And she pulled out her 2-year sobriety token. And I get emotional talking about it. But I looked at her and I was like, "Are you sure? Like, I know what this means."
Nathaniel Rateliff also performs live. It's Sense of Place Colorado begins today. I'm Raina Duris, and this is World Cafe.
For KAXE News, I'm Larissa Donovan with the Up North Report. After years of planning, MnDOT's project to redesign part of Bemidji's Paul Bunyan Drive is a step further after the Bemidji City Council approved the final layout for the 2026 project, which includes 3 new roundabouts. The roundabouts will replace traffic signals at Menards Entrance, Middle School Drive, and Hannah Avenue. MnDOT project manager Matt Upgren says the 2026 project will last a single construction season.
A season long, meaning say early May until end of October.
Okay.
Maybe into November, weather dependent, to get to substantial completion, as we call it. You know, the following year, there's always warranty work, punch list items, things like that. But the goal is to have it back open to traffic.
With roundabouts slowing down traffic and changing the type of collisions that happen at intersections, from T-bones to glancing blows, MnDOT's Darren Lash points out the impacts those crashes have on a community.
When we analyzed that whole corridor, that crash cost was estimated at $2 million a year. This project, kind of the vision that we adopted, would reduce that by $660,000 a year. So that's a cost that our whole community absorbs every year because of these crashes.
Initially, MnDOT presented a vision for a longer stretch of this corridor further east to Bemidji Avenue. After a previous council rejected MnDOT's 6 roundabout proposal by a split vote in 2019, MnDOT narrowed the focus for this project and spent years collaborating with community members and stakeholders for a new design. The council's motion Monday included requiring a memorandum of understanding with MnDOT, with Bemidji Mayor George Prince among those on the council wanting assurances the rest of the corridor will be left as is.
That we have something in writing that we can put in the bank, because in talking to a lot of the businesses, I get the feeling that some of them agreed to this compromise because they believed part of the compromise was that the rest of the corridor would remain the way it is. And I think without that, they may not have express the same views.
Federal and state officials and energy leaders gathered at Minnesota Power's Arrowhead substation in Hermantown this week to celebrate progress on a major electric grid upgrade. The Minnesota Commerce Department says that the grid upgrade will increase the capacity and resilience of the electric grid to deliver reliable, affordable, and increasingly clean energy to Minnesotans. Joining in the celebration were U.S. Department of Energy Undersecretary for Infrastructure David Crane, U.S. Senator Tina Smith, and Minnesota Commerce Deputy of Energy Resources Pete Wyckoff. They recognized key milestones for Minnesota Power's High Voltage Direct Current, or HVDC, transmission system project, including $50 million in federal funding, $25 million in state funding, and approval by the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission in August. The Salvation Army in Itasca and Carleton counties is looking to fill 2 key part-time positions as Red Kettle campaign coordinators, 1 in each county. The positions focus on training bell ringers and kettle drivers, tracking results, and coordinating bell ringer schedules and kettle placement. The timing is particularly urgent, the organization says, as the Christmas kettle season is rapidly approaching. The nonprofit says that kettle donations are essential to help provide struggling families in the Grand Rapids area with food, housing, and financial assistance throughout the year. Visit centralusa.salvationarmy.org for more information. Through the month of October, the National Weather Service office in Duluth is actively recruiting new observers through the Community Collaborative Rain, Hail, and Snow Network, also known as COCORAHAS. This is a nonprofit, community-based network of volunteers of all ages and backgrounds working together to measure and map precipitation. The Weather Service says Coca-Rojas observers are a vital part of their operations, and they also provide high-quality data for natural resources, education, and research applications. Those who sign up this month will gain access to special live training with NWS Duluth meteorologists to teach them all about wintertime observations. Those who are interested can go to cocaras.org to learn more and sign up. That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is sponsored by Woodland Bank, with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River, dedicated to serving the financial needs of the community and their customers. More info at woodland.bank.
This is World Cafe. I'm Raina Duras. There are few bands more enmeshed in the Denver music scene than Nathaniel Ratliff and the Night Sweats. Nathaniel started out playing in the city in the early 2000s, and now he's helping nurture the next generation of musicians there with a venue he co-owns called the Skylark Lounge. That's where we met up with Nathaniel to record today's session as we kick off our brand new Sense of Place Colorado series. Coming up, Nathaniel performs live, and he talks about writing his latest album south of here in a bat-infested room. He talks about dealing with anxiety, about the impact of his breakout hit SOB, about his journey to Colorado with his longtime friend and Night Sweats bassist Joseph Pope, and more. To start things off, here is Nathaniel Ratliff playing a song from south of here called Heartless.
How was I to ever know it could get so bad? I run around heartless. Run around heartless. Tried to make it to the coast when I moved out west. Ran around angry. Ran around angry. Remember the flames in the grass, how they danced in a line. Yes, didn't fire swept across the prairie. It was on to burn our eyes. It was so cold, leaving the comfort of my Missouri home. And my childhood left me so broken, I didn't know. You're coming out even. You're coming out even. I don't recall all the things in the throes of the night. It never occurred to me. It always just hurt me. Don't be appalled with the fall. It didn't hurt that bad. I hit the ground harder. I hit the ground harder.
Performing for a Live World Cafe audience at Skylark Lounge in Denver for our Sense of Place Colorado series, you just heard Nathaniel Ratliff with Heartless, lead single from the Nathaniel Ratliff and the Night Sweats new album called South of Here. My name is Raina Duris. Nathaniel, welcome back to the World Cafe.
Good to be back.
It's always so nice to see you.
Yeah, and it's a little different change of pace to be here instead of Philly, so thanks for coming to my hometown.
Yeah, I feel like I've interviewed you on Zoom in Philly, and now here.
Right.
But you're going to have to find another venue next time.
That's great, yeah.
So in that song that you just played, In Heartless, you go from running around heartless to running around tender, which is kind of the opposite of heartless, if you think about it. Could you talk a bit about the journey that you take in that song?
Yeah, well, to be honest, I think the heartless part just kind of came about and wasn't really relevant till I think the things I was feeling. It's an interesting thing about writing sometimes is some of the words are so aligned with like a theme or, some of these... A lot of the songs are like things I pulled from my personal life. So there's hints of this song that are about Joseph Bope and I moving from Missouri to here. Also, one of my other childhood friends, like we were trying to burn a little fire ring around this giant pile of brush, and it ended up burning like 75 acres. So like when I say remember the flames in the grass, how they danced on the line, it was like actually how the flames were moving across the field, and then when they would get to the fence post, they'd climb the fence post and like kind of dance around the barbed wire. Tried to make it to the coast, I moved out west. I ran around heartless. I don't think I've ever been much of a heartless person. If anything, I've been like a recklessly vulnerable.
Yeah, you don't strike me as a heartless
heart
guy.
Heavy. Yeah.
Too yeah. much heart.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, that was a long answer to that.
No, it was a great answer. When you put out Heartless, you said that this was an album that you made in a room with your closest friends. But I want to rewind a bit to before you got into that room when this album was like really first starting. What kind of creative headspace were you in when you first embarked on writing these songs?
Well, initially, I hadn't really intended to make a record. I think it was a bit of a miscommunication between me and my manager. He was like, "You're done? You don't have to do anything next year." I think he was trying to be comforting and being like, "You don't have to do anything next year if you don't want to." But at some point, two things happened. At first, Brad Cook and I, Brad helped us finish our last record, The Future. And Brad and I go back a long ways from when I had a solo career and he had a band called Megaphone. So in January of 2023, he was like, "I have 10 days. What are you doing? You want to come hang?" And I can't ever say no or stop working. So I was like, "Yeah, I'll come out." And so I went out there with just the intention he was kind of going to help me get organized. I keep a lot of like voice memos and demos and recordings, and they kind of get spread out. You know, it used to just be on like tape recorders and notebooks, but now it's on like a computer or my phone or my iPad, and I am horrible at figuring out where those things end up. And so, yeah. And so he kind of helped me get organized with that, and then through that we kind of started picking through some songs, and I started on working on, you know, he's like, we kind of worked on some other ideas that I had. And I didn't feel like it was a very fruitful trip, but we did write 10 songs in 10 days.
That sounds fruitful.
But I was just kind of being hard on myself, and I think that was like partially the beginning of this record and kind of like one of the main threads that is kind of running through in the content of the songs. And then, so after that first initial little thing, then my manager, and I'll jump back to the slight me misunderstanding, him trying to comfort me and me thinking that I didn't have to do anything for a whole year. He was like, "It'd be really good if we had a record out next spring." So I was like, "Okay, well, when do you want me to do that?" And he was like, "Well, you have time in March to write." And I was like, "Well, I have March off, but you know." And so then it became, I took another 10 days in March. And I was really feeling kind of all over the place. And sometimes I think, you know, it's hard to have perspective when you're really busy. So many good things are constantly happening in my life, but sometimes it's hard for me to have perspective. And so I kind of had mixed feelings about where I was at in my life, because as soon as I stop working, I'm just kind of like, nobody likes me. You know what I mean? Or like, and this is consistent among other friends of mine who are singers as well. It's like, you get off tour and immediately you're like, well, my career's over. Everybody's going to forget about me, you know? And I think that's some of the way like our culture works now, and especially with social media and things that like our constant need to be validated and seen. I don't know. I was kind of all over the place emotionally and really struggling with anxiety. And that had really popped up in January when I started to work with Brad. Just this like ongoing negative voice in my head that I continually can seem to get louder and louder. And, you know, and I would take time off from any substance and like, you know, and just like have long bouts of sobriety to see if that was it. And because I feel like I've been even using alcohol as like a Band-Aid, even because I feel like I really struggled with alcoholism for a long time. I didn't feel like it. I did struggle, you know, like, and so like kind of trying to figure out balance in all those areas and then starting to notice how things affect you, you know, and what you need and what you don't need. So, but yeah, I always feel blessed that songs kind of appear and, you know, whether that's the muse, there's a lot of different names for it.
I want to come back to some of the themes throughout the album in a minute after we hear you play another song. But before we do that, I'm speaking with Nathaniel Ratliff on World Cafe. I thought it was really interesting that when you went to Sonic Ranch with Brad and the band, that once you started recording, you didn't get to listen to any overdubs for 8 days. So you didn't listen back to anything that you did.
No.
Why?
That's just the way Brad wanted to do it. And I was like... you know, producers, you know, every producer has a slightly different method. And I think the biggest requirement to having a great relationship with the producer is trusting them.
Yeah.
And I love Brad and we have a pretty deep relationship and I deeply trust him. And I know that as much as I want my bandmates to be seen and heard, so does he. We came in, we did Heartless. We played it a couple of times. And not all the guys had heard it. And we're just playing it in a big circle in the biggest room they have on the property. It's like an old equipment barn that now has turned into a pretty... You wouldn't notice it from the... Well, you wouldn't notice that any of the things on the property are a studio. It's pretty lackluster in a beautiful way.
But didn't you end up writing in a room that you later found was infested with bats?
It was infested with bats.
How did you not notice that it was infested
with
bats?
I kept hearing them, but there's, you know, I live in the country and there's critters, you know, you got like pack rats and regular mice and there's always something. There was like tons of snakes in my walls when I first moved into my house, bull snakes. So you never know what's in there.
You say that so casually. Like there's just tons of snakes in my
walls.
Yeah,
they would also like some of the mortar on the brick wasn't, it's never been fixed. But when I first was in there, there would still be, you come out in the morning and there'd be like a couple of bull snakes, just like heads sticking out, warming in the morning sun. And I would tell my partner, Taylor, I'd be like, hey, babe, just careful right there when you're leaving. There are a couple of snakes. They're cool. They're just warming up right now. They're not going to do anything. And even today, she was like, I'm glad you always see the snakes. And I've never seen one. Because if I see one, I'll always be like, hey, just remember, there's snakes. It's that time of year.
You know what? Let's hear some more live music. Okay. Then we'll come back and we'll talk some more. We're going to hear you perform Everybody Wants Something next. And it starts with you looking back at maybe simpler times at the beginning. Is there anything you can tell us about this song?
Yeah, this was... I really like this song. And it's a bit of a sleeper, I feel like. But it is just kind of talking about, like, coming up and being a songwriter and, like, kind of, like... And then, you know, like, the chorus is... wait, is there ever time to figure it out? You know, is that what people consider reaching enlightenment, is figuring it out? Or, I don't know. Or do you ever? Or is there an easier way to take my trash out a half mile down the road? I don't know, you know, but some of this is like me looking back at like some, you know, beautiful but slash lonely moments. And I've never played this in front of anybody, so we'll see if I mess it up or not.
This is Nathaniel Ratliff performing Everybody Wants Something live for the World Cafe.
Breaking into the night, we were coming of age. We were just running around trying to be kids. Never want or need to be saved. We were waiting to fall and just drift away. I was looking for an answer. I was trying to find my way. I was getting nowhere. Life was taking its time. And I was staring out the window, just wasting mine. And all I wanted was peace and calm, somewhere to land I could call my own. I was looking for something I just don't know how to see. Wait, is there ever time to figure it out? Wait, is there ever time to figure it out? Everybody wants something, they just don't know how to say it. And all alone, even in a crowd, and time wasn't missed as it slipped away. And every night I was scared and proud, sitting in a hotel, trying to write a dream. I was trying to see the world for everything that it could be. Wait, is there ever time to figure it out? Wait, is there ever time to figure it out? Everybody wants something, they just don't know how to say it.
Everybody Wants Something, performed live by Nathaniel Rateliff at the Skylark Lounge in Denver. Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats broke out in 2015 with their song SOB. Nathaniel will talk about why that song still means so much to him, even if he doesn't think it's the best thing he's written. That's after a quick break here on World Cafe.
Happy Friday, and thanks so much for listening to the World Cafe on Northern Community Radio, KAXE, KBXE. My name is Dan Gannon. We receive support from Itasca Reliable Insurance Agency, handling a complete line of auto, home, business insurance, and more, located on East Highway 169 in Grand Rapids, online at itascareliableinsurance.com. KAXE is partnering with Lakeland PBS for Debate Night 2024 all this week. What questions do you have for local candidates for the Minnesota House? Email news at kaxe.org. Zomya Theater Project presents A Prairie Homeless Companion, a musical play that paints a statewide picture of housing insecurity. The show is Friday, October 11th at 7 p.m. at Wild Rose Theater in Popaski. Grand Rapids Players present Dracula, a comedy of terrors, now through October 13th in the Ives Studio Theater at the Rife Center. And now we'd like to return you to more from the World Cafe on KAXE KBXE.
Welcome back to the World Cafe's Sense of Place, Colorado. I'm Raina Duras. Today, you're hearing a solo session from Nathaniel Rateliff, recorded in Denver, where he lives. His latest album with his band, The Night Sweats, is called South of Here. The first words on the album in the song David and Goliath are, "Can I get out of my head? I don't know." And that kind of kicks it off a little bit. And right. An interesting way that theme comes up again and again. I mean, there are more than a few lyrics about being stuck in your head, stuck inside yourself, wishing you could break free. Why is that something you think you find yourself coming back to again and again?
Well, clearly I'm not learning. I guess I don't know. I don't know. It's really just a struggle that I'm trying to figure out. You know?
Yeah.
And I have struggled with anxiety and panic attacks for a long time, and I didn't really know that's what they were. And there are moments I just, you know, I didn't know if I was losing my mind or, because I would have these like episodes where I'd get so upset that I would like stutter, and then sometimes like kind of go into like a catatonic state where I couldn't even speak. And so, you know, I'd be like a teenager working night shift at a grocery store, and like I had nowhere to go. There was no safety net, you know. Mm-hmm. There was no, my mom had moved away and gotten remarried and was in Texas, and I was in Missouri, and was trying to move to Colorado and was going to maybe move into my van. And that was like the first time I remember being like so upset. I just like totally shut down because I didn't know what to do, and there's nobody to ask. And so throughout the course of my life, there was lots of events like that, you know, and even as an adult, and I never, well, I guess I never had the opportunity to like seek help. And the one time I had brought up some things, my stepfather was like, suggested institutionalizing me. So I was like, well, I'll just go back to Colorado. I'm going to take care of this on my own. Those things that started as a child, those never really went away. Those threads of depression and anxiety, they're still like a huge part of my makeup. Then there was things that I covered it up with for years. And then as you start to peel away those layers of whether that be addiction or, you know, yeah, even positive things that I did for myself that are to an extreme without balance could be a hindrance as well in terms of like trying to find a solution. And I think the answer is there's really no singular solution. And I think that is a problem we suffer in our culture is there is no drug, there is no anything. It's like it's a whole system,
yeah.
You know, of things that you need to put in order in your life to try to control the unrationalness of your mind or your busy mind. You know what I mean? And I think, yeah. You know, people that I love who were influences on me, now I look back and I'll be like, now I know why Leonard Cohen like became a monk for all those years. You know, it was really to try to ease his mind. And so I'm still trying to figure that out. And I think it just happened on this record. It's all been coming to the surface. So, you know, I'm a perfectionist, so I want to be the best I can be, which was probably something that's screwing me up too, you know. So,
but I mean, there is no like set age or date when you're supposed to have it all figured out. I don't know if that ever happens fully.
I think there was an idea of that, but you know, it's like, you know, but I don't think that actually worked either, because the people who got a career and married and had kids very young fell apart as well.
Yeah.
So I don't know. You're right. So,
you've talked before about being an introvert, but acting like an extrovert.
Oh yeah.
And I'm so curious about how that works when you have chosen to be a performer.
Well, performing is easy because you can feel completely alone in front of thousands of people. And it doesn't like improve your insecurities or anything either. You know, like I think in social moments, I guess at this point I have to be Nathaniel or the way I feel people view me, but I'm trying to be an honest version of that now and not pretend, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, when you break out with a song like S.O.P.
Son of a bitch!
You probably would agree is a pretty extroverted sounding kind of song. Even though you've put tons of music out since then that doesn't sound like SOB, do you feel like people expect this version of you?
I mean, it's a mixed. I definitely get like the... It's weird when a little kid's like, son of a bitch. You know? And SOB, the song in general is kind of... It was like never a song that I had intended. It was literally made to like fill time for a show. I had other friends that had like a hey or a ho in their song. And I was like, I was joking about, you know, like everybody likes a good O or an A, especially in Canada. And so I was just like, well, if we get the crowd singing, then we can like do these instrumental breaks. And I was like, I'll just goof off and like try to dance or something. And that's how that song came about. And then it was also like me talking about like kind of making light of having delirium tremors. I was like on a trip to London, and I was drinking pretty heavily, but I didn't know I was drinking that much. And I remember everything kind of fell apart when I got to London, like my personal life did. And I was like, okay, this is a sign. I'm just going to quit drinking. And I like it was a painful experience, like physically very painful. And I thought that was something that only happened to like, you know, old dudes. And I didn't feel like I was old enough to be experiencing that. And that was, very naive of me. And I also didn't know the dangers I was in at the time. Right. just like heart palpitations and all sorts of things. And it lasted for like over a week. It was like pretty severe. And so it was just one of those things. Sorry, get back to not more funny stuff. So that was the whole point of the song. I was trying to make light of that situation. And at the time, we had gone back to, like, drinking. But I think then I was only drinking, like, ciders or something, so I thought I didn't have an issue. We went to make the record with Richard Swift, and it was the last song we did. And he was like, so your A&R guy loves this song? I was like, yeah. He's like, when you play it in front of people, they, like, freak out? And I was like, yeah. She's like, what about, like, your manager and everything? I was like, yeah. He's like, oh, you should probably, like, try to just make it a little cooler than it is. And we did. But that song has bought my mom a house. And yeah. I have my first home. And, you know, it's blessed me in a lot of ways. And, yeah, so it's funny because it's certainly not like, it's not the pinnacle of my writing. But it's also given me an opportunity to talk to other people that struggle with addiction, and where they're at in their own personal journeys with it. And I recently on our last tour in Europe, I saw somebody had like in my requested DMs. I try to stay off of Instagram these days, but I found a lady who had like a really personal experience with the album and was talking about her own struggle and, talked to my team and I was like, hey, I'd like to meet this person who'd be at the show. And she came backstage and at the end of this like kind of beautiful conversation and I just felt really connected to this woman and her story and her partner's story. And she's like, I want you to have this. And she pulled out her 2-year sobriety token.
Wow.
And I get emotional talking about it. And AA has not been something that I've ever done, but I know it's been really helpful for a lot of people. So I have my own personal reasons for not doing it, but I encourage anybody that's struggling to find a support group. But I looked at her and I was like, are you sure? Like, I know what this means, you know, like, cause I know the time that I spent sober without anyone supporting me. But I know that that's probably a lot, that it took a lot for you to get to that 2 years, you know. And she's like, I want you to have it. And I just like, it crushed me. And so, in some ways, it doesn't really matter how I feel about the quality of the writing on that song. Or, you know, like, I'm pleased to play it every night if it gives an opportunity for somebody's life to change. And I think that is the beauty of songs. It's an experience that's bigger than us. Once that song went out into the world, it was no longer mine, and I don't have ownership over it. I mean, I do publishing, so don't try to steal it. You know what I mean? But emotionally and energetically, it's not mine anymore. It's for everybody else, you know? And the same thing with these songs. It's like, you know, I allow myself to SOB, even if I'm making light of the situation, there are people who understand what that is like and how painful withdrawals can be, and just how painful even alcoholism can be, you know? And so it's like, if me talking about that, even making light of it, give somebody else the opportunity to heal or change or see themselves in a different light, then it was totally worth it. And I would say the same thing about this record. It's like, my opportunity to be vulnerable allows other people to have a similar vulnerability in their own lives, you know?
Well, when, you know, you've talked about feeling that fear of, you know, if I'm not making something, if I'm not putting something out, maybe I'm not relevant. Maybe I'm not good anymore. Or having a busy mind and feeling stuck in your head. When you do actually get your song out there and you hear your bandmates play a song that you've written, or you hear an audience sing along to a song that you've written, for someone who feels stuck in their head, what is that like?
Well, I have a really hard time experiencing joy and celebrating those things. You know, I want to go deep on like my Neanderthal brain that I only 8% of the population has that I have, but it's a dorky thing.
Wait,
so, but part of the hunter-gatherer brain, no, I don't know. There is a whole thing about this that I don't really want to get into. I don't know why I brought it up with being dorky.
Now I'm very intrigued.
Are you? Well, okay,
well,
I'll share
if you
with
only,
you.
Only 8%?
8% of the population have as much caveman as me. So,
okay.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I'm wild. That's what it means. You know. this was just brought up to me, and it was like a gentleman I was talking to has a similar thing, and he was telling me about this book that he read, and he had sent it to me. So I haven't got to dig into it too much. So I don't want to put my foot in my mouth. But essentially, he kind of went through this list of like the way our brains work. Essentially, you kind of focus on like it's always about the next thing. Mm. It's always about the next thing, and so being present and celebrating and finding joy in the moment is kind of impossible. And it's something I really struggled with because we play like a sold out show or do things that I never imagined, and I will never like woohoo or hell yeah, you know what I mean? I'm just like, cool, right on.
What's
the next thing, you know?
Yeah.
And so, but I'm working on that. So sorry, that really, maybe we take that out of there. That was a lot.
It's
no,
okay.
You like it?
I kind of relate to that actually.
Okay.
But yeah.
Well,
sometimes only if you're like, we gotta do the next thing. My guest today is Nathaniel Ratliff. He has more live performances for you after the break, and he'll talk about why he moved to Denver from Missouri before launching his music career. That's next on World Cafe.
The World Cafe is brought to you by KAXE KBXE. I'm Dan Gannon. All ages are invited to participate in Happy Dancing Turtle's Fall Bingo Scavenger Hunt. Look for 24 items total, including a special feature on birds. Take photos of what you find and submit by November 1st. Register and find more details at happydancingturtle.org. We receive support from Bemidji Symphony Orchestra presenting Celebrate, featuring Christopher Krevitson on saxophone, Sunday, October 13th at 3 p.m. at the Bemidji High School Auditorium. Dr. Beverly Everett conducts. Tickets available at bemidjisymphony.org. Itasca Pride is showing the documentary film How Love Won the Fight for Marriage Equality in Minnesota Friday, October 11th at 7 p.m. at Mann's Cinema 8 in Grand Rapids. Tickets available at Itasca Pride's Facebook page. Central Lakes College Performing Arts Center presents the drama Radium Girls October 11th to the 19th at the Chalberg Theater on the Brainerd campus. Tickets and more info at clcperformingarts.com. And now more from the World Cafe.
You're listening to the World Cafe, Sense of Place, Colorado. My name is Raina Duras. My guest today is Denver's Nathaniel Ratliff, recorded at the bar he co-owns there called the Skylark Lounge. Here he is in a solo performance of a song from the new Nathaniel Ratliff and the Night Sweats album, South of Here. It's called Get Used to the Night.
Around you found one way, one to get around and one to get through. And now I feel tonight like so many lost days. I used to stay home and writhe in my bed. Wish I could retire. Are you still hard with? I used to do cartwheels to land on my head. I used to know it all, but I can't remember. senior town. Going wrong down a one way. Yeah, I gotta hide myself from the storm. Don't know how long I will. You found some way, one to get around and one to get through. Used to know it all, but I ain't got to mind now. Just feel tied up and used. And it could be said that I used to have something. Against a wall and I want to be free. Yeah, with untied hands, well, what could one be? I said, it's a rhythm that could lift you somewhere new. And I want to feel the wave of change. Yeah, let's go out and find it tonight. Smile, hey baby, we can make it up as we go. Smoke.
on World Cafe. I'm Rena Duris, and that performance you just heard was in front of a live audience in Denver for our Sense of Place Colorado series. We're recording this at a venue called the Skylark Lounge, and Nathaniel, I should thank you for having us here.
My pleasure to have you here.
You co-own the Skylark.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's beautiful.
It could have been an in and out, but it's still the bar it's been for, well, it's slightly different than the bar it was, but, you know, try to keep it a bar and venue, so, yeah.
We're going to dig into the Skylark and how you ended up here in a minute, but, you know, we're spending this week in Colorado. You moved to Denver when you were 18 from Herman, Missouri. Why did you want to go to Colorado?
Oh, well, that's a tale on its own. I actually followed one of my closest, oldest friends, who was also good friends with Joseph Pope, and I grew up together, and then kind of our mentor, who was 2 years older than me, he moved out here first, and he actually came out here to work with this is an interesting statement, a non-denominational Christian organization called Youth with a Mission, but they love acronyms, so it's actually mostly known as YWAM. But when Matt moved out here, he just raved about how amazing it was and was trying to get Joseph and I to come out and do these schools. One was called the Discipleship Training School, DTS. It was really like there was just no opportunity in Missouri. Joseph and I had already worked. I had like 5 years working at grocery stores up to that point, and I was only 18, so I started as very young. We were working at this plastic factory, 12-hour night shifts, 8 to 8, and, you know, just like gnarly conditions, like 120 degrees in the factory. You'd have to take a break every 30 minutes. And that was like what the future of Missouri was going to look like for us. And so we jumped at the opportunity to try to come out here, and Matt was like trying to figure out to help us raise money, because you can raise money through the church. And I grew up going to church, so and at the time was still involved, and my mom played music in church, and that's how I started. And so we came out here and we did our DTS, and that was actually like a really heart-opening experience, and it's really focused on the self at first. And it was like kind of the first bit of therapy I think I ever had, or just like an opportunity to talk about experiences or trauma, or even realize that those things aren't normal, you know? Like, I think when you grow up in hardship, you normalize all of that. And it's something like growing up in poverty, you don't see any opportunity. All you see what, you don't want to be ungrateful with everything that's around you, and so you just accept that this is the way the world is. And I was already accepting that my world might be me working at a plastic factory, you know. And so once we got out here, it blew our minds. Like, yeah. The weather, you know, I think we came out and it was a pretty dreary fall in Missouri, and we drove through this blizzard on I-70, and the interstate actually closed right as we went through the gates behind us. And so we drove, I don't know, it was like a 12-hour drive. It took us over 20 hours to get here. But it was one of those things, like, if we stopped on the road, like, the little Dodge Omni we're in wasn't going to make it.
You have to keep going.
Yeah, we have to keep going. And it was a great experience, and I fell in love with it out here. And YWAM actually gave me the opportunity to work with the Hopi Natives, which then made me a non-believer in Christianity as well. So it's like a whole, like, I was like, wait a second, what are we doing here? I went back to Missouri to try to get some money, and we ended up working at that same plastic factory. So it was kind of like, this isn't where we need to be. So we came back out again, and at that point I was like, I don't know if, like, converting people to Christianity is my calling. And I got a job as a dock worker at first, and I ended up spending 10 years there. And then that just kind of solidified us staying here. It's like I was making $20 an hour with a seventh grade education. There was like, you know, I didn't have a GED. And so I was like, there's nowhere I'm going to go that I can make this kind of money. And at the time, rent was affordable, and we were young enough that, you know, I think Joseph and I shared a room, if not a bed, for, I don't know, 10, 15 years of our lives. And still sometimes it happens, so. and even other friends of ours would, like, would move in I'll be like, yeah, we got room for you. And just be like, all right, well, it's just me and you sharing the bed again. So I didn't date a lot. There was always like a buddy in my bed.
It's a tough sell when you bring a girl over.
I don't know if like the phase where I was wearing like a top hat with bell bottoms was really working out for me either, but we all get there somehow, you know? So.
I mean, I know that the Skylark has existed in some form or another since 1943, and it's been in this building since 2003.
Correct.
You and some friends took over the Skylark a few years ago.
Correct.
Why did you want to step in and buy it when it was being sold?
This neighborhood has meant a lot to me. Until just recently, I've lived in the Baker neighborhood, and I probably lived here for at least 15 years. I feel like this block was like important to me and my experience as a musician and artist, and the support I felt like through all the projects that I've had over the years in the community here has been like I wouldn't be where I am without that support. And I felt like this neighborhood was also an integral part of the music scene. As goes with progress, you know, things would change, and I think we just kind of wanted to hold on to a sense of the old neighborhood and kind of keep this a bit of a dive bar and a venue. And the previous owner, Scott, he fell in love with Bob Ashby, who's the manager and the other owner here, and he gave it to us for less than he was asking, and was getting offers for more. And he was just like, I would hate to see it like turned into, you know, like a chain restaurant, or for it to be, you know, it's nice that the building's been here for a long time and it's still a part of the neighborhood. So
my guest today is Nathaniel Ratliff. This is World Cafe. The last song we're going to hear you play tonight is the title track from your new album, South of Here. What can you tell us about this song?
This song actually was another one of those songs that I like picked up my guitar, or I was like going to put it away, and I just did like a... I just started strumming something goofy, and for whatever reason, the first line of the chorus kind of came out, and I immediately heard my friend's voice, Courtney Marie Andrews, and I was like, oh, I got to write this with Courtney. It just kind of got away from me, and we never had an opportunity to sit down and write, even though she was excited about it. And then the song just kind of came, like, in the course of everything I was writing and what I was feeling, I was like, you know, sometimes like I had this longing to just go back to Missouri, go back, like be in the mountains here. And just try to remember the person I used to be, or like what are the things that shaped me. Like, in order to realize where you're at, to have that perspective, sometimes you have to look back, you know.
Yeah.
But South of Here isn't necessarily a place. It was just sort of like the metaphor to explain that, like having to go somewhere, having to go through something to figure out where you're at. And I think that's kind of what this record is. Me trying to see myself, I guess. So, yeah.
Performing live for the World Cafe, this is Nathaniel Ratliff, South of Here.
In the corners in our opinion, is I wandered up the road. Not abandoned, but it's hard for one to know. You just find the wind and flow. If I can't take it no more, then I would have to move away. Maybe south of here they'd let us be. Just move on. That made me go back home, remember who I was. I leaves have found no other way. Be the only one left standing when everyone else is home. I just can't hate the work that you love. And if it breaks, well, how do you know? Do I hang in the balance? And now I'd have to move away. Maybe it's out there that let us be. And I would have to just move. Thank you so much.
Performing in front of a live World Cafe audience at the Skylark Lounge in Denver, Colorado for our Sense of Place Colorado series, Nathaniel Rateliff, South of Here. Nathaniel has been my guest today on the show. Thank you so much for having us at your bar and performing for us today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for coming here and doing this with me. It's been a real treat to talk with you.
You can find an extended cut of my interview with Nathaniel Rateliff at worldcafe.org, along with upcoming installments of our Sense of Place Colorado series. Thank you to World Cafe's senior producer, Kimberly Junot, for her work on that session. And thanks to all of our affiliates across the country, but today, especially KJAC in Denver at the Colorado Sound. Also, thanks to the Wincote Foundation, who makes Sense of Place possible. We produce a show at WXPN at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. I'm Rena Duras. Thanks for listening to World Cafe from NPR.
World Cafe is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and by the Walton Family Foundation, working to create access to opportunity for people and communities by tackling tough social and environmental problems. More information is at waltonfamilyfoundation.org.
You're listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXE Bagley-Bemidji. We're Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of the people and land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Listen at KAXE.org or on your smart speaker. We need people like you to support this local media. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. McGwich. The Range Astronomy Club invites you to the Bovee Sports Complex Friday, October 11th, for telescope viewing of the night sky. There will be an informational talk at 7, with viewing starting at 8 p.m. There's an open house at the Learning Garden at Itasca County Family YMCA in Grand Rapids, Saturday, October 12th, from noon to 1, including a class on planting garlic. Weather in our listening region today, mostly cloudy, then gradually clearing, highs 57 to 65, breezy north winds 10 to 20 miles per hour, evening lows 38 to 42. Saturday, partly sunny, highs in the mid to upper 50s, slight chance for showers in the afternoon, calm wind, good chance for showers in the